Hello, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I'm Net Control Operator for the Limark Technical Net. Limark Technical Net is on every Sunday night at 8 p.m. here on the Limark repeater system. So it's 8 o'clock, and it's Sunday night, so here we is. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you the usual links. Okay. If you need to get in touch with me and you can't do it on the radio and on this net, email is a good way of doing it. That would be either to ask for any mailbag questions. That was a very popular feature for many, many years of the technical net for people who couldn't get onto the radio. They would ask their technical question via email, and we would try as best we could to answer it. Also, if you have any topics that either you'd like to discuss or you'd like to discuss with other people on the net, or you'd like to hear discussed, or if you have a puzzle to share. We are always on the lookout for a technological puzzle to interest people, to get their brain cells going, and remind them of some universal rule about nature. And in addition, if you would like me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at a NASA space-related story and comment on it, of course, if you want to email him directly, he is available at spacenetreport at gmail.com. That's a mailbag. We have a link page. It's a very nice link page. It has a bunch of YouTubes and articles and some illustrations that Paul might be using during his SpaceNet report talk. The link page is just type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to our link page. We have a chat room. You can either go to Limark's own website and look for the link for the chat room, or you could just type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you directly to the chat room. We have an audio stream that I put through the Internet. It's available 24/7. It repeats what was on the Glen Oaks repeater. So if you are outside of radio access and you can't get through to Echolink, but you do have an Internet access, type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you the audio stream. And as always, I like to remind people that Mike, KC2NJI, has a wonderful archive of Limark Technical Nets going as far back as September of 2006. His site is amateurradio.tv. He's had more than a million visitors, so please avail yourself of these many, many years of wisdom from amateur radio operators who are still heard on the technical net and some, unfortunately, who have become silent keys. We drop. Okay, so the game plan, as per usual, is I will ask if anyone out there has any technical questions. I would prefer the early questions to be related to amateur radio, but as time goes on and we run out of amateur radio-related technical questions, I will open up the questions for any aspect of science and technology and even medicine. Again, we do not treat or diagnose over the radio, but broad subjects can be discussed, and it would be my pleasure to help and explain things that I can, or at least discuss them with other people who have more experience on certain things than I do. That should take us to about 10:15, when Paul, WS2N, will give us the SpaceNet report, which should take us approximately to 11 p.m. when we will tie it up in a bow and wish you a happy week and call it a night. This presupposes that everything in my shack works well, everything in the repeater shack works well, and we don't get another repeat of the interference that manifested last Sunday night that took up a good portion of the technical net. So that's the plan. Let me drop for a second and ask anyone out there who has any questions of a technical nature to give me their first name and their call sign.
KG2RY, David, good evening.
82NFJ with a question, technical.
82UDU, Wayne, supporting the net.
Okay, Dave and Sam recognized, and thanks UDU for supporting the net. Anyone else want to put their name down tonight for any questions of a technical nature? Okay, well, we'll start off with Dave and then go to Sam, and hopefully as time goes on, there will be more people out there. I do have a mailbag question from a few weeks ago, which I answered the gentleman who asked the question via email, but we can discuss it here as well. Dave, what's your question or topic for tonight?
Good evening, Roy. It's a technical question. It involves computers. I'm setting up Pro Audio for a computer for someone. And maybe I could learn something about it from you or anybody on the net for all the parts of this thing to make it work well and to make it work properly.
Okay, Dave. Unfortunately, Pro Audio is an Apple product. I, although, have a great deal of respect for Apple, and I have a lot of their iPhones and iPads, I never really bought into the computer portion of the company, and so my immediate experience with Apple software for computers is not great. So is there any particular aspect of Pro Audio that you have in mind for discussion? Because I understand it's a somewhat complex piece of software.
Well, it also works on PC, either one. It's used for video editing, audio editing, or just listening, but really, really good sound, you know. And you get a pair of amplified speakers. In this case, person wants a sub bass, so I get him a sub bass, which works with the two speakers, the same manufacturer. And you hook up the two speakers to the sub bass, and you connect the sub bass to the DAC, which is a audio interface that plugs into the computer's USB 2.0 port and gets its signal from the USB port. I think this audio interface is mostly a very good sound card. Go ahead.
Okay, maybe I misunderstood. What is exactly the name of this product?
Well, the ones that I use, the ones that I recommended, it's made by Yamaha, HS5. The sub-bass is HASHS, which is an 8-inch subwoofer. And the audio interface, I don't remember which one I ordered for him, but I use an Apogee Duet. And there's also a thing called Scarlett 2i2.
Okay, so what you're really talking about is a DAC. It's an analog to digital, digital to analog converter that's used usually because sound cards in computers are not exactly as high quality products as external DACs. So is the question more related to a USB method of running an analog to digital and vice versa interface and feeding that into a piece of software that manipulates those devices?
the Apogee Duet requires software and also a firmware in the unit itself. The Scarlett 2i2 requires no software at all. So you plug the interface into the USB port, and then there's like system preferences settings that you make that allow for it to operate. And I guess that's about it. But you can also record. So there's left and right going in and left and right going out.
Okay, so basically it sounds like it's a digital audio workstation you're talking about, and there are a large number of different ways to build that from a computer. As you mentioned, there are companies that sell daughter boards that plug into the chassis, and you operate them through software in the computer. The other methods, like the Scarlett, is a USB interface that either has its own built-in driver, so you don't have to worry about it, or it's a small process of installing a USB driver for that device. And then it's like having an extra sound card, and there's a whole bunch of either proprietary or free or expensive commercial software that utilizes this high-quality sound card in order to get better resolution, wider frequency range, higher dynamic range, and all kinds of useful features. One of the newer things going on these days with audio is instead of 24-bit resolution, which old sound cards used to have, nowadays more expensive equipment will do something called 32-bit floating, so that it's much more difficult to overdrive the amplifiers. If you overdrive a digital to analog converter beyond its ability to record in the number of bits for each fraction of a second, it will just distort. So I'm assuming that's what you're getting at.
QSL. Well, you can get a cable, and it has on one side 3.5 millimeter stereo, and on the other side is a Y adapter to two XLR connectors. So you connect the two speakers. Well, forget about the subwoofer for a minute. You connect the two speakers into the headphone jack of the computer, you know, and the quality of the audio is really flat, really kind of, it doesn't really add up. But if you use an audio interface and you connect it through a USB port, you get a much fuller sound.
Well, yes, that's due to the limitations of a standard motherboard. In the old days, you got really bad audio, and anyone who wanted to have any decent audio with a tower computer would have to buy a daughter board. There were a couple of companies that made their profit simply selling sound cards. About 10, 15 years ago, motherboard companies started to just put chips on the motherboard themselves. Usually they're designed and manufactured by a company called Realtek. And so they give inexpensive, reasonable quality audio signals, but for those people that want a wider frequency range and a wider dynamic range, that's where these third-party DACs, digital to analog converters, come in. So basically you're buying a higher quality sound card or a USB device that operates as its own high-quality sound card. Scarlett makes a whole range of these types of devices I've seen. They're very small, compact, and rather expensive. I think their top-of-the-line Scarlett device can set you back something like $500, $600, and it weighs less than an ounce.
QSL. And a couple of times I walked into Stereo Exchange. And it was a few years ago, you know, when this idea of DAC was new. And the idea was that a person would have a laptop or a desktop computer with audio software and a playlist, you know, favorite playlist of CD quality audio. And I remember, you know, looking at these super high-end stereo systems, you know, connected with an audio interface and a computer, you know, and it seemed to be the way of the future, you know, for people with the hi-fi. And I guess it's pretty good because I do it, and, you know, I know other people who do it.
Well, once again, it depends upon your ears. Some people are tone deaf, and so it's overkill. But other people, guys in the engineering business or the kind of freelance or do it as a hobby, there's a lot of sound editing equipment out there, of course, for people who don't want to spend any money. And I'm always in favor of not spending any money. Audacity is a wonderful recording device, and you can do all kinds of spectral manipulation with it, and it's free. And if you discover the trick, you can actually have more than one instance of it running. It's not designed for more than one instance, which annoyed the heck out of me years ago until I figured a workaround for that. So right now I have two instances of Audacity recording stuff as I speak. So there are free sound editors that plug into these devices. There's something called an ASIO type of sound interface that has a lower latency than USB-based sound devices. Those are available as well. It's a fascinating subject. It's a very, 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 very broad subject, though. There's a lot of software. There's a lot of hardware, as you mentioned. You were just kind of getting to the tippy top. You know, of course, getting back historically, Creative Labs were the guys who brought the Sound Blaster, and I think they still sell a high-end sound card to be plugged into computers. But, you know, this Scarlett, and as you mentioned, there's Apogee, and there's a whole bunch of other companies. So it's really a kind of broad-based subject that you brought up.
WB2GXM.
Yes, GXM.
Good evening, Roy, and happy holidays to everybody. I want to bring to your attention some hardware and some software. First, the software. I have been investing in Reaper for quite a few years. Reaper is a multi-track audio software that is very deep. It is easily as good as Pro Tools. It costs $60 to register it, and you can use it for free as long as you want to. You pay $60 to support the author. Let me drop. As far as hardware is concerned, I'm very partial to Behringer. Behringer makes a lot of really good stuff, and it's not expensive. WB2GXM.
Okay, very good. I happen to have a Behringer mixer. These days I do most of my mixing internal to my computer, so I haven't used it much, but they give you a certainly good value for your money. They are not high-end. I think they're designed in Germany but built in China. But relatively good quality. I've never had any problems with it. I have heard of Reaper. It's a very good sound mixing piece of software. I've never actually used it. It kind of overwhelms me personally. It's one of those things that, at least when they show it off, is a very multi-track design. I usually don't mix that many tracks at any one time. So again, my Audacity it suits me as well as my needs. But yeah, Reaper is a fine product. Again, if you get over the learning curve, I'll ask you, Rich. Was there much of a learning curve? Did you notice it, or was it kind of rather simple to go with it?
Reaper does have a learning curve, and they have shortcuts and, the quick start PDF you go by, and you can get started rather easily, but it's still very deep if you want to go there. That's what I like about it. Reaper is as deep as you want to go, and it is a lot deeper than Pro Tools lets you go. And in fact, for $60, you can't go wrong. Pro Tools, what, a few thousand dollars just for 8 tracks? Come on.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. Again, I don't know. Do you really mix that many tracks together?
In my alternate life, I am a composer and record guy and also a musician, and I do tend to go into Reaper and to the various corners. I still love it. I will swear by it. WB2GSM.
AC2GS. Well, you learn something new every day, and I learned something new about you, Rich. That's great. I'm unfortunately not truly a creative type of a guy. So, I mean, I use a different audio software called the Voice Meter. People might know it. It's again more of a mixer than it is a visual mixer like Reaper and Pro Tools are. And I use it for all kinds of things. It's the way that I have my Flex Radio with its 8 discrete software receivers interacting with my ICOM 7100 radio inputs and outputs and my FDM 400 inputs and outputs going into internet streams, going into EchoLink streams, doing all kinds of fun stuff when everything is working. But that's interesting to know. So, Dave, if you have any particular questions, perhaps Rich might help you as well, because, again, he's more into the creative aspects of mixing.
Well, I make music, mostly soundtrack music, for videos. I use Ableton Live 10. I have used Adobe Audition. But Ableton Live 10, the basic one, and I have DaVinci Resolve 17 for video, and it works really good, and it's free, and for questions, maybe he can recommend to me the best audio interface for the money.
Yes, Wesley recognized. Wesley is a big fan of DaVinci and many other pieces of software. I've seen that he has a control surface for DaVinci. It was directed to Rich, and then after Rich comments, I'll pass it over to Wesley.
Sorry, you got me cleaning pots and pans. All right. Don't have any real recommendations. They're all really good. Scarlett is certainly excellent. Behringer does well for me. There are quite a few interfaces out there. And you go for what you listen to. Audition them at your local store. Guitar Center's still out there in Carl Place, WB2GXM.
Okay, that's good advice, Rich. David, they all kind of have their specs written down, so you can kind of at least compare the documented specifications. The bandwidth, the dynamic range, whether or not they're capable of ASIO connections as opposed to USB connections. in case you want something with less latency issues. And then, you know, you can always try them out and see what they sound like. Wesley, what would you like to say on this subject?
I wonder if he played with SoftTube.
Can you repeat the name, please? I didn't quite get it.
SoftTube. SoftTube.
QSL. No, I've never used it. I'm going to look at it right now.
Okay. So I was dealing with all of the software that you mentioned. And before Blackmagic made DaVinci Resolve available with sound, it was coloring software. So I've been with that for quite many years. And I was using SoftTube to mix all of the tracks. They also have individual pieces of software, which would be the drummer, saturation, TSRI-1R, reverb, and tube delay, but those are just the pieces of the software. Then, starting from version 16, DaVinci Resolve became really great in it. Now we have a 17 and 124 channels. So 124 tracks, individual tracks, if I'm not mistaken, Rich. Okay. So now everything could be done with HIN DaVinci Resolve. As it was mentioned, DaVinci Resolve is for free. And Premiere Adobe was a leading company. The history of it was that Vegas from Sony also decided to go for monthly payments along with Premiere. And for video and audio, it was good, but with all of the modules, you could end up with $600 per month of payment. Now, when you have a DaVinci Resolve, the studio version is paid, but it's one time paid, and all of the updates are free. That's $299, and you don't have to pay any longer. So the only difference between free version and the studio version is that free version allows you to make video and audio in high definition, but not much difference if you want to have 4K, 6K, 8K, and 12K, then you need studio version, but $299? One time paid, and they make all of the updates, all of the necessary drivers for new electronics that works in music industry and film industry.
Jackson.
Yes, Rich.
Trying to remember all the brands of hardware that I've worked with in the past. Just want to add two more. Mark of the Unicorn is very good and not expensive. Focusrite is another company that's making very good interfaces. They tend to be on the high side, still good. WZ2JXM.
Yeah, I have a Focusrite. It's a pre-amplifier. So if you have a dynamic or you have a capacitive bass, a microphone, those are the good preamplifiers for the computer to operate with any kind of software. The good thing is with Focusrite, they have a multi-channel. So the one that I have is one channel and two channels. But a 284 actually, no, I have a 284 and 282. So two microphones, but you could have also a connection to the guitar or any kind of electronic music devices plug into it. Yeah, I have it. I have two of them. So I'm extremely satisfied with it. And thanks.
AC2GS. Yeah, Focusrite makes a large number of different devices. It's one of the favorites for many people as a preamp and digital analog converter interface for podcasts and such. So you see a lot of that depending upon how many individuals are in the podcast. They'll buy one with two channels or four channels. They're well made. They're reasonably good price for the quality. So that's an option as well. I took a look at SoftTube. It seems a little on the pricey side. I tend to think they've sort of gone away from the whole master software, and rather they seem to be pitching a lot of their add-on effects. There are a lot of sound effects that you can buy and others that you can get for free. A lot of them are called VST. They come VST 1, 2, and 3. And there's some other versions of plugins that affect the sound. You can get all kinds of pitch adjustment, tone tracking. So you can get someone who sings out of key and force them to sing in key using software. So VSTs are a whole line of software, and they run on a lot of different software sound editors. So if you're at all interested in soundware, software for sound, you should take a look at VSTs. It's a fun little thing to play with.
I have some more.
Okay, Wesley.
Hey, Tim. 3 years ago, Blackmagic started 8M. So it was 8M Mini and 8M Mini Pro. Now it's 8M Mini Extreme ISO. So ISO stands for ability to record. Now, it's a small device, about $1,500 with the tax. It looks like a keyboard with plenty of buttons on it, but it's very small. It takes very little place on the desk. So it's much smaller than the regular keyboard. Let me jump. So let's say I have three cameras. 8M Mini Pro allows me to connect eight cameras, but and two sound sources independent, and there is all of the volume control and all of the additional buttons dedicated to that input. It has the USB-C for hard drive, for SSD, so you could record everything on it. So let's say you have a Skype or a YouTube or any other communicator chat with people, and you want to do the presentation or you want to show something. So let's say if you have eight channels, and let's say you have three cameras, so you connect three cameras, and then but those cameras are not USB cheap crap. just a regular cameras. You have a camcorder, or you have a film camera. So you connect those cameras into the ATEM. Now you have a few extra, ports. So let's say you have two or three computers, or you have an additional device that has a movies on it, or the educational material on it. So you connect them instead of the cameras. Now, when you play it on Skype or on YouTube, or let's say you don't have to even play it on anything, you just record it on the SSD. So you can have all of this material. It goes with 8 tracks to the DaVinci Resolve software, and all you need to do is just take it out of the SSD, and now you have a completely sync in timeline material for creating your video. But sometimes I'm with some scientists from Europe, and they want to see some, when I'm talking, I can present some materials on it. Apart from that, this thing has also the pictures. So not only the movies, not only playing the computers while I'm talking to them, but I could have still pictures, and then I can switch to MP1 or MP2, which are two different bins for the pictures, and I can simply quick from switch from picture to the picture to the another picture, and follow my conversation with them being supported with the material. So this is absolutely great stuff. Now, ATEM Mini Pro, the ATEM Mini could be, it's the smallest one, it's 4 channels, could be purchased for $70 on eBay. The original price was like $170. Many people want to sell it because they went to more advanced one. Enter Xia.
AC2GS. Well, thank you, Wesley, for that. And ATEM Production Studios, that's from Blackmagic. They're very good video switchers. I think we're veering out of David's line of conversation right now. If you want to do a lot of sophisticated live video switching, it's a very good product. I think, though, he's alluding more for multi-track processing and high-resolution audio and such, and high-dynamic range audio. I don't think that the ATEM is really focused on sound quality quite as much as it is a real-time video switching. So although it's a beautiful toy and an effective tool for people who need something like that, I don't know if it makes sense for what I perceive to be David's usage. I don't think he needs a real-time video switcher of multiple channels. Could be wrong, but David, do you have any particular interest in video switchers that happen to do audio, or are you primarily focused on sophisticated multi-track audio software that hooks into the hardware that you've been discussing?
Well, right now I'm interested in audio-visual software. I use Ableton Live for a lot of the multi-tracking, and I use DaVinci Resolve for the video side. And right now my project is to set up for someone Pro Audio, just for listening, you know, just for the sake of hi-fi, you know, how to get it to sound really good. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I have some additional.
Okay, one second, Wesley. Yeah, I know what you mean, David. In that type of a case, you know, I think we're kind of overcomplicating, which I'm more than happy to help overcomplicate things. I think what your friend needs is simply a good, high-quality, low-noise, high-dynamic-range digital-to-analog converter and software that you can pump through it that's capable of that dynamic range to get the most out of your sound system. But Wesley, make your comment.
ATEM Mini Pro Extreme ISO. It's ATEM Mini Extreme ISO. That's how it's being called. So it's now 120 kilohertz. That should be enough. So it does have a connection to your microphone. But if you plug instead of the camera of the sound source, you have 120 kilohertz. And human ear is able to hear 20 kilohertz at 16 kilohertz. 20 kilohertz is a typical highest end of the bandwidth that we can hear. Some animals can hear up to 27, 32. Bats, I'm not sure bats, how high bats could hear. Do you know, Dr. Roy?
GXM.
Yes, Rich.
If you want to answer the question, then I have a comment about sound cards.
Yeah, before we talk to, I think it's BD, I think bats go up to about 200 kilohertz. They're ultrasonic. I didn't quite get your call sign, BD.
It's Rich Boy with BD Bravo Zulu.
Oh, okay, Rich. It was very noisy, and the first half was truncated. So, Rich, what's your comment? BZ, Rich. We now have two Riches.
Yeah, I'm on the handy talkie. I would say that $20,000 would solve this problem.
Well, you made me laugh, Rich, so I appreciate that. Getting back to real life, I think we're kind of over-engineering this for a person who sounds like they just want to hear good quality audio. You know, if you got a couple of bucks to a couple of quarters to roll around and you don't mind spending a little extra money for quality, I would see this as a kind of easy fix. That Scarlett USB connection is a very low noise. There are a few other qualities other than the frequency range of a DAC. You want something with as low noise as possible so that it doesn't inject any extra material other than the music. Also, dynamic range might be useful. Some people don't really like very wide dynamic range. They find the loud parts too loud and the quiet parts too quiet. But definitely when you pay for a little extra, you get a something that has a lower noise floor, which is very important for high fidelity, more so than frequency range. My ears probably can't pick up anything higher than about 9,000 hertz at this point. And as I get older, it'll go lower and lower, as it does for most of us out there.
GXM.
Yes, GXM. Well, I'll call GXM because if I call you Rich, you won't know if it's talking to you or BZ.
AC2GS in the group, WD2GXM. One last comment, Dave. If you're looking for a simple sound card to go from your computer to high-resolution audio, StarTech, 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 makes a good line of sound cards that go out of your computer and the audio can be fed into your computer. You can find them on Amazon. WB2 checksum.
Okay, very good, GXM. I'll have to take a look at that. It sort of depends on Dave's friend. It they might have a laptop, so you can't really shove a daughter board into a laptop. That's sort of why I just settled upon the USB. Almost everyone's computer for the last 20 years has a USB interface. Okay, that's good advice as well.
USB.
Yes, GXM, you doubled with Wesley.
StarTech is USB plug-in to audio out.
Oh, okay. So that settles that as well. I'll have to take a look at that. Again, I guess it really depends upon the amount of money you want to spend. The Scarlett USB DACs are very high-end. They're not very massive. Sometimes people will look at something that's $400 and it's less than an ounce and be a little bit annoyed at their purchase. So I will take a look at StarTech, and David might want to do that as well. Wesley, you wanted to say something on the subject?
The original 30-year-old concept was SoundCard. But then everything switched to some external devices. That's why when you have, let's say, the Focusrite as a preamplifier, it is outside. You can change it. You don't have to do any changes in the computer. But coming back to DaVinci Resolve, many people use Zoom as a platform. I noticed that our club is using Zoom for video conferences. So if you have a live streaming on YouTube or Zoom or any other platform, right, you can have music, you can have a video. But also interesting thing is that the ATEM, any ATEM, allows you, actually, I don't know if that's the first one, but the ATEM Mini may not have it, but the others, the more advanced one, you could have a picture of you on any corner, and you can make the size of the picture up to your preference. So this way, when the audience is looking at the material that you are talking about or the music that you're presenting, you could have your picture of yourself there. And you can pop it out, make it smaller. You can have it even half of the picture, whatever you want to do. So it does have a picture-in-picture. But it allows you also to have four pictures at the same time. So let's say you have four different frames. One is video, the other one is picture, the other one is schematic and whatsoever. You could have all of them at the same time, and still you could have you yourself, and it does green screen. So if you don't want to have a frame like a picture of yourself, you could have yourself on the green screen, so it shows you like overlying without any frame at all. So this is also another thing from that comes with ATEM. And to Exia.
AC2GS, well, that's good. Again, I tend to think that this is overkill. Because the way that David is presenting this, the person he's doing this for is primarily interested in just good-sounding music. So video switchers are wonderful toys to play with, but I think they're overkill for this application. Also, there are a lot of other ways of doing the same thing, some in hardware, some in software. I have a piece of software called ManyCam. that kind of does picture-in-picture all over the place and video switching and software and such. It's a software solution, not a hardware solution, but the software doesn't take up any extra desk space, so you got to keep that in mind as well. And in addition, there are even free products out there. NVIDIA has something called NVIDIA Broadcast. If you happen to have an NVIDIA graphics card in your system, it lets you do green screen and noise reduction, and it even centers the image on the presenter. So when I'm doing Zoom and I have that plugged in, the camera tracks me. So if I move my head to right or left or up or down, the camera appears to be like there's a cameraman behind me, in front of me, moving the camera when it's just software. So there's lots of software out there that does video switching. It, you know, different strokes for different folks. But going back again to David, it sounds like he just needs a good quality, low noise DAC.
Well, right. I have a problem with that. If you have four different clips of music, or eight clips of music, or let's say six sources of music, clips of music, and two cameras, all of that is within your reach, dear, and the quality of the music is exactly the same one as you would all have with high-quality sound card. It's 120 kilohertz. Enter XGN.
Okay, but again, you're setting up a premise that doesn't apply to me. I'm not trying to sell music on Zoom, so I do relatively simple things, or I do things that amuse me. I at one point set up my my Zoom so that it tracked a cartoon version of me with a lip syncing, just for the sake of figuring out how to do it. But again, there's a lot of things that computers are capable of that most people don't need. It kind of goes back to the old adage of just because you can do something doesn't necessarily mean that you should do something.
Well, when there is a person who wants to play this track for a few seconds, and he's a musician, and then another track for a few seconds, and another track for 1 minute, it doesn't matter if it's a sound or it's a sound with a video. You can deliver sound or sound and the video to the video input. So it's no difference. It's like you have a switcher for the music, but it's a switcher for the music with video. And it is, the ATEM doesn't care if it's a video, it's a music, or it's both. And the quality is the same. Correct me if I'm wrong. And to XGN.
No, I don't think you're wrong. It's just that, and I have nothing against Blackmagic. They make beautiful stuff, and I have nothing against video switchers as a concept, and I think Blackmagic makes very nice video switchers. I just think that video switchers is not really what we started talking about. David didn't mention anything. He mentioned that he works with video, but the person he's trying to set this up with sounds like they're more interested in listening to music. And so it would be sort of like discussing a high-end, good-quality electron microscope. It might be a wonderful electron microscope, but I wouldn't suggest that David suggests to his friend that they buy that electron microscope, even though it's a wonderful one. I don't think it particularly sounds like it would serve the requirements of this individual. That's all I'm saying.
Music is a social activity. Music for one person with one person in one room is different than music of the guy who has a music software, 16 tracks, 24 tracks, and now he would like to share it. So before the time, we were going to opera. We're going to some music hall. We now, during the COVID time, have ability to actually share the music with other people. And he say, listen, how do you like that? And the other guy has the same item, and he says, yeah, I like that, but look, if we add to this, this. And now he has a choice, either visually and verbally and musically deliver that information to you, or just listen to exactly the same form of the transmission of that information. Do you agree with me that music wasn't created for one person?
I do not know how to answer that. That sounds almost like it should be part of the philosophy net. Human beings tend to be social creatures. They tend to live in social structures. There are some exceptions to the rule, as all things. Music is social. But music can be antisocial as well. It can be individual. That's why there are headphones, because there are times when one person wants to hear music and the rest of the people in the room do not. So it is more a philosophical quandary than it is an ultimate yes-no statement. So let me just tag David back. I mean, just to make sure that I haven't gotten it wrong, you're looking for information for a person who wants to listen to music by themselves personally or with a small group of friends locally. You are not discussing someone who is making a production copy of something, streaming something, sending it to the end of the world. It's a kind of individual, I need something that makes my sound system sound good.
KD2FIU.
Okay, George, would you like to join us here in the Philosophy Net?
I'll be real quick about this. This is not about music. This is about the reproduction of music. Music is the actual construction of music. And I didn't hear anything about that. And everybody's saying it's music, it's music, it's music. This is about the reproduction. Music itself consists of many, many, many different things than what has been discussed here.
Okay, George, but in doing that, you tend to do the exact opposite of what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to narrow it down. You're trying to broaden it out. You're now saying that we are talking about putting music into some device in which someone can listen to it and enjoy it. So I don't think, again, that this particular person is going to spend a lot of time with sound editors manipulating things. Again, it could be wrong, and I'd like David to kind of help to focus us back into the subject of, I think primarily he was talking about reproducing music in an enjoyable form.
Yes, thank you. Reproducing music. It's not music itself.
I have a question for Rich. Is he still here?
Limark TechNet tonight at 8 o'clock. This is the W2VL repeater.
WB2GXM, are you near your radio?
My understanding was he's not. I assume my understanding was that if he is interested with video and sound, it automatically says that he needs to create something that has both. But what is music without exposure? I've been many times between musicians, and they have some rhythm, or they have some idea, and that idea could be only 3 seconds long. or 10 seconds long. And they were having a problem of sharing it. So my question to you, Dr. Roy, is what is music without exposure? Or is it, there is no music without exposure? Because